This fella Ronaldo is a cod.
Arsene Wenger's been in Japan for a year. He doesn't know anything about English football.
I'm so happy, believe me. I'm so happy. Happy New Year.
Con Giovanni, incredible. Dribble, 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 dribble.
We will go away, baby!
It's the history of the Tottenham.
I have nothing to say. I'm so sorry, I have nothing to say.
Man United turned around a 1-0 halftime scoreline away to Aston Villa on Sunday to come out 3-1 winners by full time. This was the 11th time this season they've come from behind to secure a result, making for 31 points earned from losing positions in 2020-21, smashing the previous record. Hello and welcome to the Total Football Podcast. I'm your host, Second Art, and joining me is Andrew Conway.
Hello.
Andrew, how can they keep getting away with this?
Well, you'd think someone would come at them and, you know, shut up shop to stop them scoring more goals or to coming back at the game and equalizing. Honestly, it is a pretty amazing statistic. It's the way they set up to play. They play a very counter-attacking game where they lull opponents into a false sense of security. Often that involves conceding goals, it seems. And yeah, the opponents continue to come onto them after they've scored a goal, and it just gives Man United more and more space. And when you have attacking players of the caliber that they have available to them, that when they're in form, they're outstanding. And certainly a lot of times this season they've been outstanding in those circumstances.
Yeah, because, like, you know, I think we'll have maybe a longer discussion about Man United at a later point this season, but, like, they've had a really weird season, and this, I think, is central to that. Because, like, the things you talk about there all make sense and are things we've really discussed at length about Man United in the past, but also they don't really make sense that they would be good at coming from behind, because, you know, if they find it hard to break teams down and they keep going behind 1-0 to these teams, why then are they so good at breaking them down and coming from behind and getting a win? Like, what are they doing to maybe open up teams, and are they doing it in a way that, like, is this like a different type of breaking teams down that Solskjaer has figured out? Like, I don't think it is.
No, I think you might have missed what's right and obvious in front of you. It's the unbelievable, unprecedented, completely unfounded in any sort of logic, optimism and positivity and confidence that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer portrays. He did it when he was Cardiff City manager. He's done it all the way through Man United manager. He's always put this confidence forward that it's Manchester United, isn't it? And for that, he seems to have a lot of his players on board with it, and they just keep going. For a lot of the times when they've been awful and terrible, they've kept going with the same tactics and it's not worked out. But so far this season, and indeed a lot of last season, it's worked out in his favour, and they haven't really been caught out by it. That if you just, you know, they're good players, you keep going, you keep doing the same things over and over again. It doesn't matter if you're conceding goals, just keep on going and you'll get the just rewards out of it. And that's really, that optimism and confidence is what has made the season for Manchester United.
But, like, that speaks to good man management then, does it not? That he's able to keep these players, and they're, like, to a certain extent, superstars, like, which are the hardest egos to manage. Like, he is keeping them on board, you know, he's able to keep them going when they do go 1-0 down. A lot of these goals that they do concede are early in games as well. Like, a lot of them, they go behind within the first 5 minutes. And then, like, I think for a lot of teams, when that happens enough times, your heads kind of drop. But he has managed to keep these players onside in a way that, like, you know, they absolutely did not stay onside with Jose Mourinho by the end there. So I think that does speak to good man management to an extent. And it's been weird because, like, obviously in the past we've been very critical of Solskjaer, but, like, they've been pretty comfortably second best this season, which is, like, much more than we would have expected from them at the start of the season. Much, much more than we would have expected after they started the season. Like, they lost 3 of their opening 6 league games, and since then they've only lost once since. They've lost the least amount of games in the league, though they'll probably lose one this week given their fixture congestion. But this is definitely a weird team. Like, Karol Anka, I think the Athletic correspondent for Man United, has said that, like, they're a team with a lot of footnotes. Like, they're a team that has a lot of quality, but there's a lot of footnotes around them. There's a lot of caveats to how good they
Fred.
Are. Fred.
Although he got the pre-assist assist for Marcus Rashford for that third goal.
Yeah, and I think Fred's actually played a little better in recent weeks, or better than I would associate Fred with anyway.
Better is a relative word, yeah.
Yeah, ever since that Tottenham game, where again they went 1-0 behind, one of Mourinho's last games at Tottenham. Like, ever since that match, I think they've kind of clicked into gear a little, and they are actually starting to play a bit better, because there was about 6 or 7 weeks there where they were picking up results, but they were not playing well at all. It was basically the time they missed Paul Pogba, essentially, which I think shows, like, he's had a pretty good season. He is pretty important to this side, it turns out. A really, really good player who costs a lot of money is actually pretty good, it turns out.
Amazing, that, isn't it?
Yeah. So, like, I think he's been important. I think Cavani as well found some form. Whether he can keep that up for another 12 months, whether he stays for another 12 months, I know is something Man United are pretty uncertain about. But he's done pretty well in the last 6 weeks as well, and stepped up well. Martial's been injured. Martial as well just hasn't had a great season. So, like, no. And Greenwood too as well has come on again, after struggling for 6 months there. So, like, again, it's been a weird season, but they secured top four. For successive seasons, which is the first time this has happened since Ferguson left. Mourinho couldn't do it, Van Gaal couldn't do it, obviously David Moyes couldn't do it. How is it that Solskjaer was able to do it?
Well, like, I honestly believe he has a better group of players than any of those did. I know obviously Moyes had the remnants of a league title winning side, and that, you know, maybe Moyes did have a better side than currently Solskjaer has, but overall he's got proven winners in there. He's got a guy that's adapted much better than probably any of us thought would adapt to the Premier League, and he's brought huge experience in Edison Cavani. Defensively they've remained solid and really without much injury most of the season, until of course like Maguire now this weekend, but they've remained fairly like injury free for a lot of the season in their defensive area. Further up the field, while they have lost players injury throughout the season at different times, they've been able to, when someone's out of form or someone drops out of the team, like you said, they can bring in Greenwood, and even if Greenwood's out of form, that's when Rashford will come into a bit more form. Or even Daniel James, who had a bit of a renaissance and a bit of a run in the side come the second half of the season, where he was completely absent from my memory from the first half of the season. So they have a lot of quality and strength and depth there that they can call upon and really bring through, which really, while Mourinho's sides and maybe Van Gaal's side have big star power, and this side does have star power, this is complemented more with a bit more higher quality in the rest of the squad, like Lindelof, Bailly, Maguire, Shaw, what's the name of that young fella, the young fullback they have, Wan-Bissaka, the likes of James up front. You know, while Mourinho or Van Gaal may have had Mkhitaryan or may have had Di Maria or may have had someone of that ilk, they didn't have anyone to follow that up if those players weren't hitting the highs. And that's really the difference this season, is that there's players to come in when those other players aren't making a difference. And that's even with losing Jesse Lingard and him going on and having one of the best second halves of the season a player's had in some time.
Yeah, and it has been a weird season for Man United in that sense, but I think one of the things that Solskjaer has done well is whenever a player does kind of go out, someone seems to step up. So like there was a time there where Lindelof around Christmas kind of fell out of form and went out of the team, and Bailly came in and had 4 or 5 games where he was amazing, and then suddenly he fell off the face of the earth again, and Lindelof was able to come back and slot back into his old role, and like they've been able to do that across the pitch. Harry Maguire's been one player that hasn't missed any football, and he is going to miss the next few weeks now, probably the end of the season. It's going to be interesting to see who steps up in that case, or if someone can step up to replace Maguire.
Yeah, if there is one hope, and we didn't even mention the goalkeeping, which is a very unusual position for them to interchange, but they've been doing that as well to some success. But yeah, Maguire is a bit of a concern for them. Like, while he isn't, I don't believe he is that great of a footballer. He seems to be a stalwart and a rock for Manchester United in defence, even if he does make silly mistakes sometimes, and that lead directly to defeats, as we witnessed earlier in the season around those times when United weren't doing so well at the beginning of the campaign. I think it is a concern, and it's probably the only hope Villarreal have in a Europa League final, because, you know, Bailly and Lindelof, they're not proven well together. I think they've played a few times in the past before, and it hasn't gone well, if my memory serves. So, yeah, if there's one hope for the teams that are challenging Man United over the next few weeks, and primarily the Europa League final, if Maguire doesn't make it back, it is that the defensive partnership at the back maybe isn't all it's cracked up to be and can be got at. But I think United are going to have, despite my, you know, misgivings about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, about his style of football, about the, you know, when things aren't going right for him, he keeps doing the same things, and very often that can result in long-term defeats. But for United this season, it hasn't. He's likely going to finish second and win a European trophy, and, you know, that's better than anybody else has done except for Jose Mourinho since Ferguson left. So yeah, he can be pretty happy with his lot at the end of this, considering everything else that's gone on this year.
Yeah, like, it's been, even just the last few weeks have been a bit odd for Man United. Like, they had the old Super League fiasco involving them as a pretty central character. Then obviously they pull out of that. Then the fans protesting at the Liverpool game postponed, which has led to the week that they're going to have here, where they played Sunday against Villa, and then they play Tuesday, Thursday, and then Sunday again, I think. So like, that's a hectic schedule and a half. Then also this week it was announced that the Hutt Group pulled out of a £200 million deal to sponsor the training ground, which is a lot of money, even it if is. It was spread out over 10 years. Like, that's a guarantee of £200 million. Like, that's a lot of money for a club that is usually quite good at pulling in money from sponsorship. So that is again a consequence of the anti-Glazer protests that we've seen, which is what caused the Liverpool game to be called off. And this is an interesting consequence, because I don't think we've ever seen a sponsor pull out of a deal before it was announced over the ownership of a club. Do you remember that happening before?
No, not really. I'm trying to think of something like that, but it's certainly a moment that'll probably strike fear into a lot of businesses going forward.
But like, that is a pretty direct consequence from that, I would say, because I don't think if they don't announce that Super League breakaway, I don't think United fans really get the confidence, but like the desire, I suppose, to immediately protest the Glazers. And then from that, like, that led to not a penny more, I think, was the hashtag on social media that they were specifically targeting the sponsors, which I think was a clever next step for those involved, because, like, you know, realistically, calling off one Premier League game will hurt the brand image of Manchester United, but it won't really hurt the pockets, and really that's where you need to go if you want to get rid of the Glazers.
Do you remember,
was a smart move.
It was very much I was trying to think of the example. Do you remember the News of the World?
Newspaper.
It was a Sunday newspaper, the Sunday version of the Sun, effectively a Murdoch newspaper, and they were I think it was to do with the phone hacking scandal that eventually brought them about. But basically, people, it wasn't a case that, oh, boycott the Sun or boycott the News of the World. That is a campaign that's existed in Liverpool, for instance, for a couple of decades at this stage. But what they did is actually started boycotting the sponsors and advertisers in the News of the World, and that's when the penny bit, because then eventually no sponsor would touch the News of the World. And I'm talking about the likes of Tesco, Colgate, Kellogg, you know, massive companies, that Coca-Cola, these, you know, places that would normally not care, and they would advertise everywhere because it's what they do. They wouldn't touch it. And I think that's, while this is a big win for that campaign, I don't know if it's something that can be repeated elsewhere. Like the Hutt company, or whatever they're is that what they're called? The Hutt Co. or something?
The Hutt Group.
Hutt Group, sorry. They are a very specific type of company that deals primarily with selling direct to consumer, selling certain brands direct to consumer, and they're an easy target for a campaign like this. I do not see, like, if it is Aon, again, a massive insurance company that will have international market appeal, or whoever else will come in and take this training center, training kit sponsorship. I don't see that necessarily having the same impact on one of those companies, especially if they market it correctly. But it is a big win for the fan group, and long may it, you know, reverberate through the rest of the clubs out there. I don't think it will, but I hope it can.
Yeah, because I think it was Grace Robertson made a really good point on her really good newsletter a few weeks ago when she was writing about this, and she was saying that one of the things that kind of marketing has done in the last 15, 20 years is it is market, like, companies market themselves as, like, for the people, like, you know, they care about social issues. Whether they actually care about social issues doesn't matter, but they market themselves as caring about these things. And now, you know, football clubs are failing to do that. They're, you know, they're not really looking at what the fans actually want, and this was Super League was a direct attack on what the fans actually want. So, you know, if brands are going to keep, you know, brands are going to side with the fans, because, you know, that's where they've been going for the last 15 years. They've been associating with their consumers, going after the social issues, even if it isn't something that they really actually care about. You know, they have to make it look like they do, because that's how PR works now.
Yeah.
And that could be kind of the downfall of where these clubs go, and for these owners, because they've completely failed to read the room in that case. And it, maybe, you know, maybe we will actually see international companies make a similar decision, especially off the back of this this decision, because again, 200 million is a lot of money for Man United, and again, obviously it was spread out over 10 years, but it's still, you know, a guarantee of that much money over 10 years is a lot.
That's a new signing or wages of a massive player for their contract. You know, it'll make a difference, let alone other expenses that have been incurred or have been missed out on in the last year, and Manchester United are not immune to that.
And elsewhere on kind of the fallout from the Super League, Chelsea announced this week that they're opening up a new agreement that they will have 3 Chelsea supporters on the boardroom, which is an interesting development. The fans won't have voting rights, which I suppose is the actual, the key demand, I suppose, that fan groups want at the moment, is they want to have a say on the direction of the club, and this doesn't give them that. But it is an interesting next step, I guess you could say. I suppose it's baby steps in a way. What did you make of that?
Yeah, like, it's positive, and I think Chelsea are one of those clubs that are more in touch with their fan base than maybe some of the other big Super League clubs, or care more about what their fans think.
I think that actually, your point is correct. Like, that goes back to what I was saying earlier about the brands trying to get after social issues. Like, Chelsea have done a lot of that in recent years. You know, they were big on giving the NHS space if they needed it over the last year. They were offering fan groups visits to Auschwitz to learn more about the struggle of the Jews during the Second World War. Like, they are very open in that sense, which is quite interesting.
It is, because Chelsea is a club that has a checkered past and has a lot of fan issues in itself. Like, it's not one of those, you know, all holy place. As you said, they've had issues before when it comes to anti-Semitism. They've had issues when it comes to violence, hooliganism. It's well known, and it goes back along many years. But they are trying to rehabilitate that, and, you know, fair play to them in that regard. They're making efforts towards it. It's the least they could do, I suppose. But this is more than the least they could do. They're offering fans voice. You know, this is the type of engagement that clubs like Arsenal and Spurs have been long after with their, you know, kind of absentee owners. They have no voice in decisions, even if it is just a kind of, what's it called, like a gimme, or a, you know, it's a pantomime type of seat on the board. It's not someone with real power, but it is at least someone that can be made aware and then communicate to the fans on behalf of the club at large. You know, that is some engagement that, you know, Manchester United doesn't have. As I said, you know, City definitely doesn't have it, and neither does Liverpool, even for a city that's so close to the fans of the and the people of the city that they operate in. It is something that none of these clubs have, and you know, if it is again the start of something, a trend, maybe it's only a positive one.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully maybe other clubs will take notice of this, and will maybe even go a step further, because again, like, this is very much a baby step, and I've seen a lot of people suggest that, like, oh, fans shouldn't be in the boardroom because they don't know what they're doing. But first of all, I think these owners have displayed they don't exactly know what they're doing either. Being a billionaire doesn't make you have the greatest insight into everything, which is perhaps a lesson greater society could maybe learn from this whole thing as well. But also, like, the people that will be appointed to this role will be people who know the club inside out, know what they're talking about. And it will go to a fan vote as well. Like, so these will be people who represent their people, I guess you could say. So I think this is a positive development. It's not quite there. It's not quite what we need. But it is good to see that the pressure is continuing. Momentum is being built. And that we're still seeing consequences weeks later of this. And we're seeing consequences on the pitch too. I guess you could say, considering what's going on in Italy with Juventus, lost 3-0 to Milan, which puts them fifth in the table, which would put them out of the Champions League for next season. There's also the news story today that Juve might be expelled from Serie A considering they haven't withdrawn from the Super League yet officially. So, you know, it's good to see that it's not just the English clubs that are being involved in this as well. Like, the Italian clubs and the Spanish clubs are facing backlash from this as well, because obviously, you know, we see a lot more of what's going on in England.
Yeah, like you would like to see more in Spain, and I don't expect it, to be honest, because of the way the media and different things are run over there. But definitely, yeah, Juventus are in trouble. Their form has dropped through the floor, with the exception of one match against Napoli, which it doesn't seem to matter anymore because Napoli have gone ahead of them. Their form has really collapsed, and really they were outplayed, outmuscled, outclassed by a Milan side that even missed a penalty and could afford to win by 3 goals, which is something to say for this Milan side that's kind of running through the motions at this point and really limping to the end line after such an impressive early start to the season. Like Pirlo, I think, will be gone in the summer, unless there's some drastic change in form or upswing in form, and the Roman teams don't come up because they're right behind him. Lazio and Roma are right behind Juventus as well. Things could even get worse for Juventus before the season's out. So yeah, I think there's a lot of change happening at Juventus. They could be expelled from Serie A. They've been there before, so it's not an unprecedented thing. They have been relegated before, and this could happen again. So it'll be very interesting to see if Cristiano Ronaldo stays at a club in Serie B, or lower, for that matter.
Yeah, because like, I suppose the turnaround of fortune for you, they all started when they signed Cristiano Ronaldo a few years ago from Real Madrid for, I think it was about 100 million at the time, which was an absurd fee for Real Madrid to get, considering the age of the player, and then technically made a profit, I guess, considering they bought him for 80 million.
Financial fair play, you know.
Yeah, but ever since then, they won a couple of Serie A titles, but they got worse in Europe. They got knocked out in the last 16 to Ajax, or it was the quarterfinal of Ajax, in the last 16 to Lyon. Then this season it was Porto, and now they don't look like they're even going to be in the Champions League next season. Napoli, Atalanta, Milan have all kind of overtaken them. Inter ran away with the title. They've just been completely embarrassed, and it's their own sheer arrogance that has put them in this position. They thought that they could hire a completely inexperienced Pirlo to take over, and they just get away with it essentially. And now I suppose their chickens are coming home to roost. Is that the saying?
Yeah, I think so.
You know what I mean. Like they're facing the consequences of their own actions. So you know that in a sense is, you know, there's a great Schadenfreude in that. You know, very enjoyable. To see that as well. So it'll be like, they do have a tough last few games. They still have to play Inter, and even though Inter have won the league, they absolutely despise Juve, especially Antonio Conte now, I suppose, will want to get one over on his former club. So you know, there's no love lost there. They'll want to humiliate them. They'll want to be the ones that kick them out of the Champions League for next season, and then from there the ramifications, like if they do withdraw from the Super League and they stay in Serie A and they just play in the Europa League next season, like that is a pretty big deal financially for the club that are already kind of struggling again, because they pay the wages of Cristiano Ronaldo, I think it's like 60 million a year that they're paying him, which is just absurd really when you think about it, and they can't afford to do anything until he's gone. Like there was a story there a couple of weeks ago. I don't quite know the veracity of it or whether it's true or not, but there were talks that they were in talks with Allegri to come back, and basically he said, yeah, you're gonna need to get rid of Cristiano Ronaldo, which is what I said to do the last time, and is why I left, was basically the gist of that story. And he wants to build a team around Dybala instead, which Dybala was probably Juve's best player on the pitch when he came on, so you can kind of see why that would be the case if it is. Juve are gonna have a big summer ahead of them if they're in the Europa League.
Yeah.
And it's been a while since they've been in the Europa League as well. Like they've won 9 Serie A titles in a row. Like this is a huge fall from grace.
Yeah, it's a massive come down for them, and it's long been coming as we talked in the last few years where, as you said, Ronaldo was there, but none of the other charm or magic that was there for the previous 6 or so title wins was available. Yeah, it'll be a massive come down for them. We'll see how it goes. Like, they do have the Agnelli fortune to fall back on, so financially they should be fine, given the loss of in revenue and everything like that. But yeah, it's, I think it they're being, like, we've yet to see the Spanish sides and how negatively it's going to impact upon them, the Super League fiasco. But yeah, really, Juventus are the poster child for, like, this is how badly wrong it can be if you overplay your cards and you don't realize your lack of importance in the grander scheme of football.
Yeah, and then the other Serie A news was that Roma have appointed a manager for next season. Paolo Fonseca looks like will stick around for the last few games, but Jose Mourinho was appointed for the 2021-22 season so quickly after being sacked at Tottenham. We've talked at length about why he was never the right pick for Tottenham. Is he the right pick for Roma?
No, I don't think he is. Like, I think his style suits Italy far better than it suited England the last few years. And maybe they think they can get one last thing out of him. He has good coaches around him. There's no doubt around that about that. So if he brings them with him, that's a positive as well. And, you know, he has the knack for winning leagues very ugly in Italy, which he did when he was his time at Inter. And he's absolutely despised by the majority of the Italian press and a lot of Italian fans and a lot of clubs in total, and players probably hate him as well. So if they want the us against the world mentality to be established very quickly at that club, he's the right man to appoint. I honestly think it's a terrible idea, and I think it'll go badly. And I don't see him lasting the season, to be quite honest. A lot of Roma fans were even shocked that he was appointed and thought it was a joke, and even though don't think he will be appointed still in the summer. But I think he will at this point because of the ownership of Roma having changed and everything going on there. It's a bizarre decision. I don't see Roma challenging with Mourinho at the helm next season. I think they'll struggle, and I think it'll be his fault.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who, you know, what players he falls out with as he normally does, and what players he kind of brings into the fold. And it's funny as well that he's being reunited with Henrik Mkhitaryan and Chris Smalling.
They love Mourinho.
Yeah, I bet that was great news for the two of them to wake up to. And I've already seen transfer rumours linking the likes of David De Gea and probably Juan Mata as well to Roma. So and he'll probably sign Nemanja Matic for 15 million, knowing Jose Mourinho. So,
Fred.
Fred would be a great sign for Roma. The thing you touch on there as well, the fact that Roma fans thought it was a bit of a, like, they thought it was an actual joke, like they were being pranked. I thought the same when I saw it on Twitter. because it was the Roma English account that I saw the news on, and I just saw a quote retweeted by someone who I think was kind of playing along or just being like, what? And it just didn't look real. Something about the announcement just looked so fake. I was like, this is definitely a fake account playing a trick on everyone. It's like, no, this is real. James Horncastle's reporting it and stuff like that. This is very real. So that's going to be interesting as well, because when was the last time? It was 2012-13 was the last time Jose Mourinho didn't manage in England, managed somewhere else when he was Real Madrid manager. So it's been a while. It will be interesting to see how he adapts to Italy again, if he reverts to doing better there than he was in England, or if he does worse.
I don't think he will. I think he's passed at this point. I do think his football suits the Italian game a lot better, but like, this is a Roma side that are going to be in the Europa League. They're going to have a lot of fixtures. It's going to be it's going to be rough. That's what I'll say. A lot of young players at that club who aren't going to enjoy the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's mad to think this is a club that was essentially being run by Monchi a couple of years ago, and things didn't quite work out there, and now they've gone for Jose Mourinho. Obviously, it's new ownership there, and that's why they've decided to replace Fonseca, is because they want to have their own man in charge. But Jose Mourinho is just such an odd pick, but I suppose it's got us talking about Roma, which we wouldn't normally be doing, and I'm sure we'll be talking about Roma next year. New segment, Mourinho Watch.
Yeah, Mourinho Watch replacing Bielsa Watch. No, it's exact what you'd expect from a person who knows a little bit about football, but not a huge amount about football. And Mourinho's a good salesman. And if they spoke to the guy, I'm sure he sold them how he's different, how he's changed, how he's evolving, how he has a plan for the club and how he will adapt to it and bring trophies to them. And that's what they want to hear. So if you hire someone who's going to tell you what you want to hear, you're going to get Mourinho. That's really... You've earned your rewards at that point, and those rewards are going to be very bitter.
And then finally, over in France, PSG drop points, drawing 1-1 with Rennes to give Lille plenty of initiative in the title. There's only two games to go, and Lille have a 3-point gap ahead in first place. So, you know, great chance for them to win a first title in 10 years. And it was another sending off for PSG in the dying minutes. What is going on with this side? Why are they so petulant?
They have no discipline, and it's something that's existed for years. Tuchel couldn't get it out of them. I think Emery definitely couldn't get it out of them before him. I think that's probably where it started, with the burgeoning of Neymar in that club and the power of him around him. There is no there's no simple way for them to do it. Like, well, there is actually, get rid of Neymar and a few of the other players, but that's not going
to
happen.
Neymar just signed a new deal to 2025 this week, so
yeah, along Neymar's with Draxler, and yeah, they're nailing down their players for the next couple of years. So this is going to be their squad, for lack of the change. Like, there's a few players departing, I think, going back from loans. I think one of the players going back to Roma, for instance. But yeah, this PSG side, they're just indisciplined. They don't know how to control themselves. They expect to win. Farmers League, as Kylian Mbappe called it last year. That's what they deemed it to be. And if they don't get their way, they get very upset and throw a tantrum. And you see it time and time again. And it may be a different player this week than it was last week, but it's the same thing keeps happening.
Yeah, and I suppose it's good that while they've kind of fallen apart, someone has taken the initiative and taking the league title from them. Like, that's kind of, again, it's a consequence of their own incompetence, I suppose, in a way, and their arrogance on pitch. So, you know, it's good for Lille, who might cease to exist within the next 5 years.
Perhaps,
got this title. You know, I have no doubt this team will be picked apart in the summer. I don't think we'll really get to see them go on a Champions League charge next year or anything, but, you know, winning a league title is a significant achievement, and if they do see it out in the next few games, I think they deserve a lot of credit for that, and I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Nicolas Pepe who really feel for, who missed out on this by going to Arsenal and suffering that indignity instead.
Of the Tottenham. We believe in the history.
Manchester City and Chelsea both qualified for the Champions League final last week. This will be City's first final and Pep Guardiola's first since winning with Barcelona in 2011. Chelsea last reached the final when they won the competition in 2012, but it's a second all-English final in 3 years. What do all of these things mean?
That the power and the money is centred around the English football at the moment, and there's no escaping from the eventual demise of European football, which we all foresaw. And Florentino Perez was right the whole time. We should all get behind the European Super League.
Well, it was a few weeks ago that we had that weird podcast where we went down the rabbit hole where I pontificated that perhaps the European Super League was staring us in the face all along. And now it does feel that way a little. But also, you know, sometimes we do fall into the trappings of one Champions League season kind of makes grander points about the future of the game, and then it turns out to not really be the case. You know, it was only five years ago that the Spanish clubs were dominating the European game, Sevilla winning the Europa League every year, Real Madrid and Barcelona training Champions Leagues, mostly to Real Madrid, Atletico losing all those finals. So, like, they were the country that was kind of giving us the latter stage of the Champions League. Now it's England's turn. It was England's turn 15 years ago. It was Italy before that. You know, even the European Cup and its old guys had cycles like this, where the English clubs dominated in the early 80s, and Spanish clubs before that, and Italian clubs. And, you know, other countries got to be involved in the European Cup era. It wasn't just these three or four countries, but now it is, you know, the English clubs currently dominate. Will we see Spain come back in 5 years? Can they afford to come back is, I suppose, the big question. And I think what will answer that is where the likes of Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe go next. Like, if they go to England, I think that is consolidating the power, and I think it really centralizes the power of the European game within England to a point where they kind of strangle and smother the rest of Europe. And I find it hard to see how anyone can compete, considering they already have the best coaches. You know, Pep Guardiola has stayed in England longer than anywhere else. Jurgen Klopp has been at Liverpool now for the last few years. Pochettino just left. Conte left, but could come back.
Mikel Arteta.
Miguel Arteta and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, of course. Frank Lampard, obviously. You can forget.
Graham Potter.
Graham Potter legitimately could be the next big manager. You know, I'm going to back by
Eddie Howe.
He's not. I see that you're trying to compare the two, but I don't fully agree. But that's not the point we're discussing at the moment. Do you agree? Like, it is about the best players, or do you think maybe this is just a cycle that will come to an end in the next 3 or 4 years?
Oh, I think it's a combination. It's a bit about the cycle. You know, you're right. If England can attract those world class players that, say, would traditionally be spread across Barcelona, Real Madrid, one of the Italian sides, and maybe a German side, if they all can coalesce in the English in the Premier League, then I think there will be a sea change, and I think the level of the Premier League has a risk of trouncing everybody else eventually. But it, moreover, I'd say it's a cycle. Like, how many Champions Leagues have been won by an English side in the last 5 years?
Just one.
Exactly. And, you know, so it's
it will be two.
It will be two this year, yeah. But, you know, that's I think that's a key point that has to be remembered, is that the, you know, the Champions League's coming back. And it hasn't been won that many times by the English sides, despite their dominance financially in the global market. It swings and roundabouts.
Like, that is the thing that kind of stood out, I suppose, in the last few weeks even. Like, you know, when Chelsea got to the semi-final, it was a bit like, oh yeah, Chelsea used to get to the semi-final quite often, but they've not been here for a while. And now, like, first final in 9 years, only the third in the club's history as well. Man City only just now getting to a final after 12 years of this ownership. Like, that is below expectations. And, you know, it's about time, really, that we got to this grim kind of final, because, like, you know, I don't want to denigrate the achievements of the players and the coaching staff involved, but, you know, they're, where the money comes from, I think, is significant, and it is a bit sad that we're getting ready for this final. Also, the fact that they'll be both wearing blue kits, I think, is just disgusting. just aesthetically, it doesn't look like a Champions League final.
Yeah, they should both wear their weird away kits, because both teams have that third, I think, Chelsea, do they have a pink away third kit? Pink and blue and a bit of yellow, and Man City have that weird graffiti away kit. I prefer to see that, to be honest, but yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be an interesting colour mash, and poor people who have a bit of issue with colour or have bad saturation in the television set will struggle. But, like, I think it's important to note as well that the last, you know, the last four English winners of the Champions League, was it three of them came in, including this year now that's coming, three of them would have been between all English finals, so they couldn't win it when they had to beat a team from another nation. And I think that shows it up. Like, it's only the absolute fluke of Chelsea beating Bayern Munich and Bayern Munich choking on at least 12 different occasions that allowed Chelsea to win that Champions League in 2012. I don't see that happening anytime again soon.
What were the other ones? It was Liverpool, Real Madrid, and Man United, Barcelona twice. Were there any other recent ones?
Arsenal, Liverpool to AC Milan.
Yes.
So there's been plenty of final participation by English sides, but generally it's on the losing one. Like, if I wouldn't worry, that's the end point I'm trying to get to. I wouldn't worry massively about the dominance of English football shifting, or dominance of European football shifting without return to England. I think they will grow stronger, and they have been growing stronger, but they still have the propensity to lose.
And I suppose the greater point that I was coming to is, like, you know, never before have the best players in the world gone to England.
No.
In the past, it's been they become the best players in England and then leave. You know, we saw it with, Michael Owen won the Ballon d'Or and left for Real Madrid. Thierry Henry became the best player in the world and left for Barcelona.
Cristiano Ronaldo. Was, yep.
Not at his best. But Gareth Bale as well. You know, there's talks of Harry Kane leaving for PSG.
Yep.
Luka Modric.
Yep. It's happened time and time again. Yeah, you're right. You're entirely right. Eden Hazard, even the goal scorer recently for
Leroy Sané.
Yeah,
went to Bayern Munich. So, like, it will be interesting. Like, this is, I suppose, the best chance the Premier League has ever had to bring in the best players, given their financial advantage. Because, like, you know, we talk about PSG signing those new contracts. Kylian Mbappe has not signed a new contract. He very much feels like it is going to be his last year at PSG next year, and then he'll leave on a free. Granted, he'll make a lot of money in that, but PSG won't make any. And the talk is, you know, that he wants to go to Real Madrid, but can Real Madrid afford Mbappe? Like, it doesn't seem clear that they can. And then they also are in talks of bringing in Haaland. Like, how do they afford to buy both of those players? Barcelona aren't even in the conversation because they can't afford it. And previously they easily would have been, it probably would have been one goes to Real Madrid, one goes to Barcelona. So now it's like, where do they go? Like, Haaland has been linked with all the English clubs. He could go to literally any of them, I suppose. All of them would gladly take him. Mbappe, do we see him playing in England? I don't know which of the English clubs could afford him. Because he does demand, like, they are both going to demand huge wage bills, huge wage fee. So that's, it's going to be interesting to see where they go.
Yeah, like, that's the bit I don't see, because obviously Kylian Mbappe claims to be a Real Madrid fan, and that's where he wants to go. like Real Madrid could, they've done it in the past. They've taken loans from the state to pay for players and to deal with things and gotten debt forgiveness and things like that from local banks, allegedly. So, you know, there is options there for Real Madrid to survive in a way that other Spanish clubs and other global clubs don't have the ability to. That being said, I really don't see how they can pay for them, especially if they get expelled from the Champions League, which is looking more and more likely, because no one's going to stand up to Florentino Perez in Madrid. So if no one stands up for him and he just continues believing what he's believing, he's going to get his club expelled from the Champions League, and that's the end of Real Madrid next season or the season after that in European football. It dents their finances majorly. They only have two games end of the season that anyone really cares about against Barcelona, and if Barcelona continue down the road they're going, no one will even care about those matches either. So yeah, it really does limit the opportunities Mbappe has of choosing a club to go to. Haaland is different. He obviously has a connection with England. He grew up a lot of his life in England. He's a Leeds / Man City fan, as far as I understand. So he has the connection to those clubs. So I think him is definitely he's definitely someone I can see definitely going to England more so than Kylian Mbappe. I think if Kylian Mbappe goes to an English club, it'll be a massive turnaround for the world football. I think that's when, not the two English sides meet in the Champions League final for the second time in 3 years, it's Mbappe going to United or City or even Chelsea. That would be a huge turn up, and I don't necessarily see it happen, but I would be amazed and shocked with everyone else if he does do it, and it would be very exciting for the Premier League.
Yeah, like that would be one of the biggest coups in English transfer history. Like, I can't think of a bigger signing that any club could make or has made in the past that would equate to that. Yeah.
Zidane or Ronaldo, or, you know, like as in Brazilian Ronaldo, that's the level you're at. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo was a kid when United bought him and they sold him as a superstar. There's been nobody bought in at that level. As you said, like, very few massive world-leading best players in the world play out of England ever. And like, I can't think of a lot. Like, Eden Hazard, maybe, when he was signed from was it Lille he was at?
It was Lille.
Maybe he was the biggest. Oh, that was a big. Everyone was shocked when he actually went to Chelsea after they won the Champions League in 2012, when he was expected to go to somewhere the likes of Real Madrid or Barcelona. But even he wasn't of that stature. He wasn't of that level. He wasn't like one of the best players in the world at that point. Like, this is proper stuff. Like, even if Messi were to go at his advanced age to England, it would be a massive coup for an English club, even at the advanced age he's at this point.
Yeah, and like, it's just strange as well that England has never really had that moment historically, and this again, I suppose, is the closest time, is the best time that they've ever had to snag that kind of transfer, and it's going to be interesting to see. Like, I think you're right that if they were to bring, if Haaland and Mbappe were to join the Premier League in the next 5 years, that would be a much bigger deal than Tottenham playing Liverpool and Man City playing Chelsea in the Champions League final, because as we said, like, these things are cyclical. You know, it could be Serie A in 5 years time, it's probably not going to be legal given their financial
Portugal.
It could be Portugal, yeah, and Portugal looks set to have more Champions League places in the next few years. Like, that will consolidate the money in Portugal and probably help them, those top clubs, grow, even though it'll probably detach the other, 16-15 clubs in Portugal. In a way it'll have a positive impact, but also there'll be massive negatives, like we've seen in Switzerland and Belgium. So like, the ramifications of the next few years, I think we could see a very different European landscape, especially if they continue with this Champions League format, which obviously I hope they don't. I hope they stick with what it has been, and maybe even revert some of those changes. But yeah, it's a weird spot. Like, I don't think now is the time to make any grand points about England, though, which obviously people are doing. You know, there was a barren spell there for a few years where no English clubs were even making a semi-final.
Yeah.
Like, that will come. You know, the one thing that will sharpen the minds of Real Madrid and Barcelona is losing. You know, for the last few years, they've had it go their way in the Champions League, and I think that cushiness has led to incompetency. But one thing to kind of iron out any incompetency is, you know, getting left behind. You know, they will come up with solutions. They will not just let themselves wither away and die. You know, that's not how football works.
What a beautiful image of Real Madrid withering away and dying.
Yeah, like a plant in the autumn.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why the Premier League's been able to come back. Like, there was a few years there where it felt like the big clubs in England were just kind of doing whatever. You know, they were just making, like, David Moyes is my United manager, Louis van Gaal, you know, these were not...
Leicester City winning the Premier League.
Yeah, there was a level of arrogance that came into these clubs that let moments like that happen where they fell out of the Champions League places even, and let the likes of Leicester and even Tottenham come through. And that has led to now where they are actually all being pretty well run and they're all reaching the latter stages of the Champions League. So, you know, that is another example of how these things can be very cyclical.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you never know what's around the corner. Ireland, League of Ireland clubs could be, you know, triumphing to the Champions League, rollicking to it, if you will. Bill Gates, you know, were available.
Balotelli!
The Premier League title may finally be decided this week as Man United play Leicester and Liverpool on Tuesday and then Thursday. I've heard a lot about ice or champagne being put on ice this week. I think I've never heard as much about ice in the Premier League. Will we finally hear the ball be popped this week?
Will we see the Jamie Vardy having a party? What's the Manchester City version of that now? Or the everyone go around see Bruce's house as it was in 93 to watch
Gundogan's... Gundogan's having a party, maybe.
Maybe.
A few years ago, it was Vincent Kompany went down to a local pub in Manchester and they won the league against Man United a few years ago. We see something like that again, maybe.
Yeah,
social distanced pub celebration.
Yeah, it could happen, like an outdoor beer garden, maybe for a bunch of Man City fans. I know last season when Liverpool, all the players went into the stadium or the training ground, wherever they were, and had a big old hoodoo when they won the league and Klopp was crying and all that sort of stuff. I see it happening this week. I don't see Manchester United being able to sustain this. They're playing so many matches in such a short spell of time. Like you're saying, they're playing Tuesday and Thursday. They just played Sunday as well, and it wasn't an easy match. The scoreline, I think, flattered Manchester United against Aston Villa in the end. So they're going to be tough. Like Leicester City and Liverpool both still have something to play for. Both are a bit more rested, not a huge amount more, but both slightly more rested than the Manchester United will be in their matches. And I think United will have to choose one to sacrifice, and likely I don't see it being the Leicester match. Or I do see it being the Leicester match.
Yeah, like obviously this is only happening because the Liverpool match was rearranged after it was postponed a couple of weeks ago now. And like it is absurd that football players, like generally, like as fit as people could be, really professional
they run
athletes.
They run a 10K every match while playing football and dealing with stress and being kicked.
Yeah, and some of these players are pushed even harder in training. I know in Atalanta specifically, Gasperini has said that he wants matches to feel like a day off. So these athletes are pushed every day of the week. I think pushing them towards three matches in 6 days is one of the most absurd things I've seen in modern football. And even, I think it was FIFPro came out and said that this is physically impossible. Solskjaer has kind of parroted that as well and used the word impossible a lot. So I think we're not going to see a fully fit, fully strength United side in at least one of these games. And of course, you know, I think we were talking about this off air as well. Like Solskjaer in a way can kind of decide the top four race.
Yeah, he can.
This week. And I don't think he's going to favour Liverpool, let's put it that way.
Yeah, like as we said a few weeks ago, two wins for Chelsea and Leicester would basically guarantee them top four finishes. And Leicester have managed not to win either of their last two matches. So they still need something out of this match. And Liverpool are teetering behind them, wanting to get something out of those teams falling from grace in the top four. So I can definitely see Leicester as well. Remember, it's the Leicester side that got humbled by Manchester United the last game of the season last year, cost them Champions League football. They'll have a point to prove. And they're a team that, you know, despite going, you know, really putting in a pretty shocking display against Newcastle United, did actually show a bit more about themselves in the second half in that match and came back into it, if not, you know, for no reason in the end. So it is a team that seems to have a bit more bite and spine than they did last year. And for that, I definitely see Leicester getting a result out of this. And basically, well, at that point, that the title goes to Manchester City.
Yeah, like this is all it takes. Like if Man United are to pull off an impossible title win, then they need to literally win every game and hope City lose every game. So I think that will hand the title to City on Tuesday. Deserved winners at this point, I think it's fair to say. So despite Sergio Aguero missing that penalty and then apologizing for it on Saturday, they'll get to take the champagne out of the bottle this week, I think.
Yeah, like it was that performance. I thought there was a lot of shadow boxing happening in that match between Man City and Chelsea, and I think City did not want to lose that match, obviously, but I think they were content with drawing it in the end. And I think there was a bit of preparation on both sides, mind games happening ahead of that Champions League final coming up in a few weeks' time. And yeah, we'll see what happens. I felt a bit of 1954 Hungary West Germany about it.
Yeah, and they met in the FA Cup as well a few weeks ago. So we're seeing a lot of Chelsea and Man City in the last few weeks. So
yeah,
and I don't think we've seen a true form of either of them in both those games as well.
No, not at all. And I think, you know, presuming Pep doesn't overthink it, and he tends not to in the Champions League finals, if you remember, like he always went with his strongest and most conventional game. I know it was with Barcelona, so it's a fairly easy thing to do when you have some of the best players ever to play the game playing for you. But he never kind of went with a crazy tactical approach for the final. And I think Tuchel's probably more likely to do that than Pep in this case, especially having lost last year's finals so limply.
Yeah, it's weird as well that Tuchel managed to get to two finals in a row with two clubs. It's never happened before. It's going to be a weird experience for him. I bet he wouldn't want a second runners-up medal, though. So
But I fear that's what he will get.
Yeah, maybe. We'll look forward to that, I suppose, in the next few weeks as well. And there's plenty of football still to play. This week there's Chelsea Arsenal as well, which I suppose Chelsea still do need to win. Yep. If they want to get top four. West Ham lost to Everton, so they're probably out of the top four race now, but maybe they could still pull something off.
Yeah, like I don't, unless Chelsea really do, you know, drop the ball, because I think Leicester are going to get that win and they'll probably get at least one more win for the remaining two games. So that would give, I think, Leicester a top four chance. Like, really, Chelsea have to go on holiday and prepare for the... Not go on holiday, but go into preparation mode for the Champions League final for something like that to happen. And I don't see Tuchel letting them do it, because I don't think he down deep in his heart believes that Chelsea are going to win the Champions League final. So they will need top four finish to guarantee their place.
Yeah, and that's going to do us this week. So thank you for being here, Andrew.
Thank you for having me, Declan.
And we'll be back again next week.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then don't forget to tell your family and friends about the show. Spread the word of the Total Football Takeover. The show can also be found on podcast services, including Spotify, by searching Total Football Podcast. You can also subscribe to my own Substack at declanhart.substack.com, where I publish two weekly newsletters that will often go further in depth on topics discussed during our shows. Those pieces can also be found on Medium at medium.com/@cheesyheartbun, H-I-R-T-E. You can also follow Andrew on Twitter at Kanban27 and myself at cheesyheartbun. Most of all, thank you for listening, and we hope to be in your download feed next week too. The more the merrier. That's what we always say.